911, what's your emergency?
Yeah, the girl who bullied me in high school just friended me on Facebook.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Do you need an ambulance?
Yeah, but not for me.
See, that was good. They're okay. Both good. We'll figure it out in the edit. We'll figure it out in that mode.
Okay.
Welcome back to the First Respodcast, everybody. Aren't we excited to be here? Aren't we having a fabulous time? I have been looking forward to this episode.
Really?
I have. There's something about like a mass casualty incident on like a California freeway that just like it helps me unwind at the end of the day.
It kind of puts you into the holiday spirit.
It does. Like, think of all of the coffins that these people will buy, you know? It's giving season. Anyways, today we are discussing, Jane, season 4, episode 9, Blindsided.
Directed by Marcus Stokes and written by Andrew Myers. Ally.
Ooh, come on, Andrew.
Right.
And come on, Marcus. Can we talk about how well directed this episode was?
Yeah, I guess. I didn't mention his past episodes because he did like one in season 3 and then a couple in season 5, I think.
I was taken aback watching this, and we'll get to it. I was taken aback by how well done the crash scene was, and I thought it looked so good. It was very tasteful. It was expensive. It was devastating. I was like,
yeah,
take
I
me
did
there.
Find that all pretty gripping. That being said, I wouldn't say this is the most memorable episode for me, which is interesting because in theory some very important things happen in it, but I guess I don't think it's bad or anything. I just, you know, it doesn't leave the biggest impression on me.
Ooh, interesting. So we'll tussle up. No, I do have to agree with that. What I enjoy most about this episode is like all the stuff with like the pile up.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of occupies a similar space in my brain to like, you know what it reminds me of? Actually, it reminds me of the radioactive incident in the tunnel at the end of season 2.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it is a little similar. With Ernest.
That was season 2, right? With Ernest. Yes, the importance of being.
I feel like it might have been season 3,
maybe.
Honestly.
It's all blurring together in my brain.
Right?
Which is crazy, because we've been going through these episodes with a fine-tooth comb.
We really have. But what can we say? Yeah, I would agree. The pile-up is good. And I think we should just get right into it. I think we should just jump into it.
We should just jump right into it. Oh, before we do, I have something to say.
Okay.
I had a dream last night, and it was a very interesting experience. I'm not going to take too long talking about it, because I do want to talk about this episode. But like, I had a very interesting dream last night, and I don't remember any of the details. But I remember that Addison Rae was present in it. And I remember that because like I woke up this morning with like a newfound respect for her.
Oh.
And so I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Addison. We're rooting for you, Diva. That Best New Artist Grammy is yours. Kick Somber's ass for us.
The views expressed by Ryan Kearns The views expressed by Ryan Kearns do not represent the overall views of both members of the First Respodcast.
I really should have been drinking Diet Pepsi for this. I'm drinking Diet Coke. I'm sorry, guys.
I will admit, I do like Diet Pepsi, the drink. However, I haven't listened to the song, and I don't really have any intention to.
You got to get into it, babe. You got to get into it. It's a banger.
It's
Aquamarine.
Really hard for
hey,
me to
you?
Accept the star of He's the Man. What was it? No, not He's the Man. He's All That. That's
he's
how
all
unmemorable.
That, right, so it's She's All That and then He's All That, yeah.
It's very hard for me to accept that the star of He's All That gets to be a famous pop star now.
Okay, well, I accepted that the guy who did the boyfriend tag with Tyler Oakley gets to be a famous pop star. And that
well,
was hard
different.
For me, too.
That's different.
How is that different?
Because that was
different?
In our
How
generation, so it was cool.
I'm going to be honest, it was in our generation, and I think it is, like, fundamentally less cool.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it absolutely
I'm sorry.
Is. 2010s YouTubers were not very cool, and YouTubers of any era are not cool. Unfortunately, it's a very uncool thing to do with your life. But I can't really get on the Addison Rae train yet, but I respect that for you, and I definitely respect things coming to us in dreams, because mm-hmm. the dreamscape is a very powerful communicator. So that being said,
as they said in the opening of the film Dune 2021.
So that being said, this episode opens with a lighthearted montage of the Buckley Han household waiting on Maddie to go into labor, basically trying to induce labor. It's this really cute montage where she's like, she's past 9 months pregnant. And this just happens with some people where it just, you get very pregnant and then it just still seems like it'll never happen. So they try doing all the classic tips to induce labor. They have her eat spicy foods. So she's like chugging a bowl of hot and sour soup. They have her try yoga and she just gets stuck mm-hmm. on the ground and can't get up. Finally, she's like, let's have sex to induce labor.
they list all the things that they did. Pineapple, raspberries, tea.
No,
spicy
they say
food,
raspberry
exercise.
Tea. They're talking about raspberry leaf tea, which
is raspberry leaf tea. I thought they were just saying raspberries and then tea. And then my question was, which tea?
Raspberry leaf tea is like both a folk remedy to induce labor and a folk remedy to help period cramps. Just so.
Oh, I didn't know that.
All my people know that.
So it's interesting. Raspberry tea is to induce labor, and then chamomile tea is for morning sickness. Because I've heard about that one. Chamomile tea is good for morning sickness.
Tea is magical. Mom drank a lot of herbal tea.
Yeah, it is. Hey, tea. Clock it.
Tea.
But yeah, Maddie's like, you know what? Let's just have sex. And Chimney's like, thank God. We should have tried this from the start. 3 days into this little game they're playing.
I'm sorry. I just love that it's canon that they're having like crazy pregnant sex together. I love that.
I 3 days into this little
I love their love. Okay.
Dance. This little dance. Albert is driving them to the hospital. He's doing the speed limit because he respects road safety rules. Maddie thinks she's in labor. She thinks she's having contractions. We get a little lore drop
that Albert does have a job. This is answering our question from an episode or two ago about what does Albert do with his spare time. He like drives for DoorDash or something. He mentions delivering food.
Grubhub era. Grubhub. Actually, it was 2021. Postmates era.
Right.
Postmates era. They get to the hospital. He wishes them luck with a very, very cute, sweet wave. Chimney gives her an electrolyte popsicle. Turns out today is not the day. It's not the day. Okay.
I think what's implied is that Maddie thought she was having contractions, but then they must have gotten told at the doctor that she was having like Braxton Hicks or something. So they get rejected by the baby doctor.
Rejected by the baby doctor. Where is that Hallmark movie? Where is that Lifetime movie? I need to know how it ends. I'm
sure
it
is my baby
harrowing. Stalked by my baby doctor. Baby daddy comes to the rescue. Maybe she gets a gun in the end. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, question. Because I don't know much about this process. I've never had a kid. And I've never been a woman having a kid. And I don't have
a
mom
man
to
having
ask.
A kid.
So... Or a man having a kid. I've never been one of those. My question for the culture is, there are medical ways to induce birth, right? Like in a hospital setting.
I understand
that these can be more painful for the mother. They have a higher chance of the epidural failing. They can be traumatic to the woman's body. They could be potentially dangerous to the child. But they do seem like, somewhat standard practices, especially in delayed delayed births like these. I'm curious why they, maybe it's because of COVID that they didn't want to go that route, or maybe it's because of the risk of bodily harm in inducing birth.
Yeah, I too have never had a child, but I would assume that, like you said, if there are risks associated with that, I would assume that probably they want to prioritize natural labor in any way they can. And so probably if it's not like ridiculously late, they probably are more likely to send you home and be like, keep trying, like give it a little more time. And then if it gets like so late that it could be dangerous, maybe they'll induce.
Yeah, because there are risks associated with having a baby late, like far after the projected due date. Because like if you go past a certain time period, the chance of stillbirth rises versus, you know, it could also be more dramatic to the mother because the baby might grow too large to be delivered in a somewhat comfortable way. It's a whole thing. And I don't envy any woman in that position. And so Maddie is feeling justifiably frustrated. Speaking of children, little baby Nia is at the social center to see her birth mother, and Hen and Karen have feelings about that.
Especially
not
Hen.
Good feelings. especially Hen. The fucking Hen goes through it this episode.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? She is having the worst time of her life.
So, like, one social worker takes Nia away to see her mom. The way it works is they're not allowed to meet Nia's mom, like Hen and Karen are not. It's part of the formality of being foster parents, I guess. And so they kind of feel a little bit left out of it and, you know, making a difficult process kind of more difficult. And their social worker, Deirdre, comes in and tells them, you know, it's about time we start scheduling some overnight visits with Nia and her mom. And...
Well, it's traumatic
really
for Nia, too.
Hen.
Yeah. It's traumatic for Nia, too, because when you see Nia being taken to spend time with her birth mother, she cries and, like, sort of screams for Hen and Karen.
Yeah,
Mama
she has
Hen,
come to consider
Mama
them
Karen.
Her moms.
Yeah, and so she doesn't understand what's happening, and it's very emotionally difficult for both of them, but especially Hen seems to be the one who's, like, really letting show what's going on. Their regular social worker takes them outside and they have an honest conversation about the ultimate goal of this fostering, which is reunification with Nia and her birth mother in the eyes of the state. And Henren have misgivings about this because they don't know anything about Nia's mom. They don't know anything about her, why she was removed from her custody, etc. And
well, you
the
say
social
Henren,
worker
but
is very
to be clear, in this scene, it's really Hen is pushing back hard on the idea of Nia going back to her mother and trying to kind of exercise any power she might have, saying, like, we want to meet the mom. And of course, Deirdre's like, you can't do that. It's not how this works. Saying, how do we know that she's in a good place again? How do we know that Nia will be safe? And Deirdre's really trying to stress, like, that's our job. You know, we can assure you that we wouldn't be doing this if we didn't think it was a safe environment. And Karen the whole time is kind of just looking, watching this happen a little bit exasperatedly or just feeling probably a little... like not sure how to deal with this situation, because Karen seems obviously neither of them are happy about it, but Karen seems more ready to go along with the process and just a little more kind of in touch with the reality that this is what they signed up for, versus Hen is like, Hen does this, we know that Hen is, I don't want to say stubborn because that sounds like a negative thing, but like stubborn in a, you know, she's very passionate and she'll kind of get her mind on an idea. And really,
she has
a strong
steadfast
sense of, like, moral justice, I guess, even when it's kind of misguided. So I think in this situation, you know, because it isn't fair, right, that they've had, Deirdre says they've had Nia for longer than they expected. So they've really come to bond with her, maybe in a way that was not expected. And, but Hen's kind of taking it to the extreme, like, not being totally rational about it. She's going, like, what are our legal options? Can we, like, sue? Yeah. Can we adopt Nia? Which is, like, obviously the goal of the, like, child services is to reunite the biological children with parents if it's possible and if it seems like a safe environment. So it's tough. It's a tense conversation.
Yeah, and, like, you kind of understand where, like, Hen's frustrations are coming from, because,
it's totally,
again, they're not being given any information. They have no options, and they feel completely powerless over this girl who has become their daughter. And this is a fault in, you know, in the state's camp as well, because, you know, like you said, COVID exacerbated this, but ultimately they weren't meant to have Nia for this long, right? This has been a protracted fostering that has brought up so many emotions that are very, very difficult. And so you understand why Hen is struggling, but I just want to say that Karen's like her background sulking, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. Tracy is like putting in the absolute work with this performance.
I thought this very was very effective. Internal. She has to work this whole scene basically without talking and just talk with her eyes and her little expressions and
she's
stuff.
So present. Oh my god, like this is a great episode for Tracy, even though she doesn't have a lot to like say in it. It's just a great showcase of how good she is with being given even just like a little bit of material, you know what I mean? She's a
and
real
really
pro.
The dynamic between Hen and Karen and where they clash a little bit with, again, Hen being this very passionate person who kind of really strives for any ambition that she has, like really goes for what she wants, even if she's not always thinking about it like totally rationally or how it'll affect other people. And then Karen is much more like measured and kind of grounded and in tune with sort of the realities of life in some ways, and so they kind of temper each other in that way.
She was a firefighter. She was a rocket scientist. Can I make it any more obvious?
You could see in the positive dimension of their dynamic, you could see maybe Hen being good for Karen, that she can kind of push her to be more bold, and maybe Karen being good at sort of reining in Hen's more like potentially rash behavior or whatever. And it's just interesting. It's good, realistic writing of two characters.
I feel bad for the social worker whose hands are, you know, in the immortal words of Principal Figgins, her hands are tied. I could never have her job. Like, I know we say this all the time, like on this show, like with the firefighters and everything, but I could never be a social worker.
That's a hard job.
I would cry. I would break down. I don't have the fortitude for it. And so, it's a hard situation. Hen says it's not just hard, it's wrong. It's the wrong situation.
Kind of this irrational, like it's not wrong from like a kind of objective perspective. It's not wrong, but of course Hen feels that way.
Objectively, Hen, you deserve to lose your daughter.
No,
objectively,
I'm
Hen,
saying,
you have no rights to your daughter.
Right. She's saying it so black and white. It's not wrong, but it isn't fair, you know, and maybe that's more accurate way to describe the way she's feeling. And so Deirdre leaves.
It's definitely not fair.
Deirdre leaves, and in the immortal words of Taylor Swift, Karen says to Hen, "You need to calm down." Because, she's kind of... And Hen goes, "They're tearing our family apart, Karen. They're tearing me apart, Karen." And this is clearly... They're at odds with each other. But again, Karen is like, "This is what we signed up for." And Hen is like, "I didn't know it would feel like this." And again, it was unfair that we had her for so much longer. She's our daughter now.
And after she kills a 16-year-old girl with her ambulance, "I did not hit her. I did not. I did not.
I did not."
Oh, hi, Athena. So we go from that to a much more calm presence, but sort of an internal, pit in stomach, because May is clocking into work. She's in the elevator, and she got a friend request from Layla.
From the main girl who bullied her to the point of trying to take her own life. So that's a bit jarring. Okay,
it's
a little taken aback.
And what does she do? What does she do? Is she so...
She takes it out on the gay
community.
Moment
of ew, she bumps right into Josh, like the homophobic woman that she is, and it just spews everywhere. Josh is, you know, taken aback, and he, you know, gets her fired and
files a complaint
she
with
dies.
HR. She gets canceled, you know, for beating up a gay man. She's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there." And Josh sees her still intently looking at her phone. And he's like, "What's going on? Are you okay?" She says, "You know, this girl from high school tried to friend me on Facebook. I got taken aback by it." And he goes, "Oh, like high school that you were just in a couple months ago?" Side note, it would be so crazy to have an 18-year-old coworker at a job like this. Like, it's one thing if you work, like, I have like a 19-year-old coworker because I work in food service and like it's an entry-level job, but the 911 dispatcher thing, like, probably there aren't a lot of 18-year-olds working there, and Josh is what, like 35? So this would be very weird. But And there is a moment later in the episode where they're like, who wants to go out for drinks? May, are you in? And she's like, I am underage. But
I like that you went for 35. I don't know why. And I'm sorry to Brian if you're listening, which I know you're not. But if you are, come on the pod. But I jumped right to 43. He has such an the soul of an old queen to me. I'm sorry.
So he's 46 now. And what year would this have been?
4 years ago. I'm right again.
You were way closer than... No, okay, Brian, I think you look great. I thought you didn't look a day over 35. But
I agree.
Ryan didn't, because Ryan's evil. Ryan actually thought you looked a year older than you were in this.
I don't... Well, here's the thing. I don't think 43 is a bad thing, because like our good friend Justin, I love daddies.
Okay.
So, all I'll say is, Daddy Bri, come on the pod.
Brian, if you are come ever looking pod. For a side gig, you should apply to For the Love of Dilfs, but mm-hmm. I won't linger on that. So,
and if
you know,
you're ever looking for a side... No, I'm kidding.
So Josh is kind of ribbing her about it, like, oh, why are you so, you know, weirded out by just somebody from high school friending you on Facebook? And she's like, yeah, this girl bullied me and made my life a living hell. And Josh is clearly moved by that. He's like, this is crazy, because now that we know he's 42 here, he goes, want me to reply to her? Like, I can think of a few words. And it's like, bro, you 40-year-old Josh, want to reply to May's high school bully for her? Like, calm down.
Well, no, yes, I believe this, because Josh is in the target demo for Facebook. May isn't. In 2021, why is May on Facebook at all?
Yeah, why is Layla on Facebook? This is weird.
No, Layla followed her on Instagram. That would make more sense to
that
me.
That would make more
but Josh
sense.
But Josh is over here like, I get into fights on Facebook all the time. I know how to send a strongly worded reply to like a bigot in the BuzzFeed comments section. I got this. And he's being a very older, protective gay dad,
right.
Which is interesting because May also has an older, protective gay dad.
Literally, a biological
Josh is the
gay
one.
Father.
Josh is the
gay
step
dad.
Gay that stepped up. Okay. and so they start gabbing, I guess, because their shift's about to begin. Now, mm-hmm. Linda walks into the break room. Maddie is there because mm-hmm. she is still working. She's not taking time off of work. Which respect. I respect the hustle, but like, girl, you're
she's
overdue.
Crazy. She's crazy.
She's crazy. She's stronger than me. But she's a very capable woman, and so
right.
we have to
Linda
respect
is
it.
Like, are you sure you should be working nights when you're that pregnant? Like, she's not just working, she's working nights.
Oh god. And Maddie's like, I got this. Please. It's just, you know, it's just Braxton Hicks, you know? And Linda's like, this looks like a labor violation. And Maddie's like, please don't say labor. And she's not doing too well. Add on top of that, there's other factors, because Linda asks, have you picked out a name yet?
Mm-hmm.
A name for your baby girl? Linda is needling her in this moment.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is not helpful. You know, I'm sorry.
I mean, what else are you going to talk about with your, like, 10 months pregnant coworker?
I don't know. Did he catch Housewives last night? Like,
okay. Well, we Linda asks, have you thought about names yet? And we get, like, a fun little cutaway of Chimney reading out all these horrible names and Maddie getting the ick. And she's like, we're still working on it. And Linda says, well, you should pick one sooner rather than later, because you don't want to end up like my brother. Okay, my mom waited until she had my brother, and then in the hospital got so caught up in the emotions of it all that she decided to name him after like the friendly nurse. And Maddie's like, well, what was the name? And she says, Norman. And Maddie goes, see me, Norman. Maddie goes, wait, isn't your last name Bates? Linda's brother canonically named Norman Bates.
Norman
That's
Bates.
Crazy.
And so Maddie, what does she do? She immediately pulls out her phone and says, we need a name now. Three yeah. angry face emojis.
So iconic.
So iconic. Over at the 118 fire station, Chimney's like, guys, I need a baby name now. Buck immediately perks up and he's like,
Buck and
not
Eddie.
After one of you guys.
Yeah.
Buck and Eddie. Imagine if they named their daughter after Eddie.
No, I think they should have named the baby
Who does he
Buddy
think
Maxine?
He is?
I think they should have named it Buddy Maxing, because somebody in our YouTube comments, when they heard that I had a new cat, said, you should name her Buddy Maxing. She said, you should name her Buddy Maxing or nothing at all. I hate to break it to you guys. The cat's name is Boggy, after my favorite Boggy. Series of schlocky Bollywood action movies. But I do
Patreon
appreciate
heard
the
it
suggestion.
First, by the way. Yeah. Patreon heard it first.
I would never be able to name a pet Buddy Maxing, because then if and when Buddy doesn't go canon, it would be like, damn, so this is gonna haunt me forever.
Well, see,
but then again, we
is...
do have prophetic powers, so how about this? When Buddy goes canon, then I would feel kind of embarrassed, because suddenly it would go mainstream and suddenly everybody would know everything about Buddy, and it would be basic to name my cat Buddy Maxing.
I agree, you're getting ahead of the curve. Here's the thing. Why would you name a mixed race female child after a term that originates in Nazi incel forums?
So true. And I'm listening and learning. And we should invite that Buck Tommy from Twitter onto our podcast to hash it out.
Oh my God, please. Hash it out. Come on the pod. Oh my God. Okay.
Come on the pod, Buddy Receipts.
We see that they were trying the account formerly known as Buddy Receipts, now known as Deactivated. Now, we see that they tried to do like the name in a hat thing. Mm-hmm. And they chose seemingly a very long name that wasn't good. And so they're like, I don't want to pick a baby.
What it was, Ryan, is Chimney picks the name out of the hat, like, here we go, yay, opens it up, and it says, I really don't want to name our child this way.
Oh.
And Chimney's like, oh, okay.
I thought you were just saying that.
You wrote, no, it's like Maddie wrote that on the paper and put it in there.
Oh, I love her for that.
And
Maddie.
Yeah, he tries to turn it into a joke. He's like, well, that's never going to fit on the birth certificate. But basically, Maddie is tired of baby name antics.
And
but,
we get a Shannon mention.
Yeah, Eddie says, me and Shannon had no idea what we would name Christopher, but then we saw him and we knew. Which, that kind of thing is always crazy to me, because it's one thing to have a list of names and then meet the baby and be like, oh, they go with this name. But the way he said it made it sound like they just had no ideas for names, saw baby Christopher and were just like, that's a Christopher, which is crazy to me, because... You looked at a baby and thought that? I don't know.
Well,
who looks at a baby?
What does a baby look like to you? What does a baby
babies,
look like to you?
All babies kind of look the same to me, no offense. And
no, I agree with that.
I wouldn't know what to name them, because you can't just... It would be hard, because you give them like an adult-sounding name. Like even Christopher, like a baby named Christopher, that's crazy. I would see it
well,
and want to name
at
it
a
like
baby
a cat.
And is like
I would
named
be like,
Paul.
You look like a little Boggy. Oh, should I name you Toaster?
Yeah. I'd look at a baby and I'd be like, oh, that's a pants to me. Oh, this one should be named Sweater, right?
Yeah.
Like you know, I understand when people name
named,
their babies after objects.
Hospital curtains. You're just looking around the room at things with you. Yeah,
any of our
I would
listeners who happen
that.
To be named Daisy or any other noun names, I assume some of you with noun names are trans, and you chose that. So, you know, congratulations.
Daisy is a real name. You can't just say that's a fake
well.
Noun name.
I mean, but it is a noun name. You know, it's
I
like
guess,
naming yourself Jet.
But it's technically
you know?
The proper, it's technically the name of a flower, so.
But that's a noun, right? Like a daisy is a noun.
I don't really know. Does that make it a proper noun?
Or like a rose? No, because it's not
and
capitalized.
A name is
or like a rose. Like rose. Like that's a noun. That's a type of flower.
If you say so.
What,
it's a
what
name
do you mean if I say so? It's a flower!
But if you named a kid flower, then that would be a noun. I mean, I'm sure it is technically a noun, but like a name is a noun too. A name is a proper noun. I feel
well,
like
we have names. Like there's nothing in this world called Jane except for people. There's nothing in this world called Ryan except for people. You know, we have names.
I guess, but like somebody named whatever. It doesn't matter. Now is not the time to get into one of our arguments over nothing.
This is my baby. Table. So Chimney suggests he takes Eddie's advice. He's like, he suggests meet her first. And then Maddie's like, Norman Bates over text. And it's very yeah. funny. And then Bobby shows up and I wrote in my notes, hi Bobby. Cause it feels like a special occasion now.
It literally always does. And it's so weird. And I guess this is just our life now.
It literally is. We'll never have the same relationship with this man because
we've
seen him
feels-
die.
And because he's often in this fatherly advice-giving position, he kind of feels like just this ghost or this guardian angel on the show, like not really like a character, which, although at the end of the episode, he does get like character stuff, which is nice.
Can I say something controversial?
Okay.
Now that we've seen Bobby die, and now that we know how his story ends, like, you could not ask me to, like, care about his momentary, like, feelings of weakness or whatever.
That is kind of one of the consequences, is he... I can't even get into it. But I do still think his stuff is effective. Like, actually, I think his and Athena's sort of conflict that starts brewing in this episode and goes up to near the end of the season is, like, I mentioned in my video, it's like one of my favorite things on the show. I just think it's written grounded way. But
I agree.
Anyway,
but I feel like I feel like I'm watching it from Athena's perspective. But anyways, it's fine. So Chimney mentions that they have all these supplies, they have these provisions, they even have rations in case the hospital loses power. I feel like it's not too far of a leap to say that in another life, Chimney would have been like a doomsday prepper, you know?
Maybe, but consider this. This is this show where so many bad things happen to people on such a regular basis, like seemingly randomly, that I would understand why he would get super anxious about being prepared. Like, you'd know if you'll get impaled by rebar on the way to the labor or...
I've read... like 911 stories set in like a Walking Dead style like version of the show, and like honestly it didn't feel that out of place. It really didn't. And you know, like, and you know my season 9, you know my season 9 where the dead
I
rose
do.
So I would support him in that endeavor. Someone not supporting him at all in this moment is Hen, who is in her own world of turmoil. And Chimney is none the wiser because he is so focused on baby that he calls her over to help restock the fire truck, which apparently they just did. And he's like, we could never do it enough times. And Hen is just like, ugh. And then... Crazy tone shift, because it's been all sitcom mostly, except for the Hen stuff this episode so far.
Yeah.
Except for the Hen stuff, it's been all sitcom. And now we have a terrified child calling 911. His name is Jacob. Maddie answers the phone, and he says his mom's acting weird. We see him. They're in the car, and they're going vroom, vroom fast. And mom is in her pile-up era.
Mom's vision is blurred. She is swerving all around the road. This is not a good situation. We don't know if she's having a medical emergency or if she's under the influence, but this is not good. And
she seems to be like in a total fugue state. She's non-responsive to like external stimuli.
Yeah,
and
she's like muttering
to
herself.
Maddie tries to like talk to her because he has Jacob put her on speaker and everything, and she's completely non-responsive. Then she starts swerving into the other cars on the road. Oof. You get like the first moments of collisions and everything. And it's like, oh shit, this is going to be so bad. And then it gets worse because they turn off of the road and onto the motherfucking freeway.
Yeah, I know this is
the wrong way.
I know this is an extremely dark scene and very scary. I did kind of find it funny the way they would cut back to the mom and she was so unbothered while driving into the oncoming traffic of the freeway.
Me going against the grain.
Yeah.
My face went, I have an unpopular take.
Well, yeah, we start to get all these different 911 calls calling in about this car that's driving the wrong way in the freeway, because obviously this is affecting a lot of different cars and different people. Yes, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be
Levins
bad.
Steps in and gets on the phone. They're like trying to get the cops to intercept the vehicle, close down the highway. And
there's one call that gets completely cut off. He's like, there's a car going down the freeway, and then the call drops and we don't have to think about it ever again. Because there's more calls, there's more crashes, it is harrowing. Sue Blevins is trying to get that road shut down, and then there is a moment where like there's no space between cars because there is an airport transit bus
that's
like
shuttle.
Wedged between two cars, and they crash right into it.
Right into the shuttle.
It is gnarly. And then
there's
more
just like
cars
a straight,
pile up.
It's just like a straight 30 seconds of like car after car gets involved in this pile up. Yeah, until it's a full-blown pile-up.
It's like very that scary. One cold open of ours that, like, is played straight with, like, dramatic music.
Stop.
And yeah, it looks like actually, a mass casualty event. It looks expensive.
You should have just used the audio from this episode, if only we'd remembered.
If only we remembered. It looks expensive as hell. It's so well done.
Like,
it's very tasteful.
There's blooming up from the crash.
Explosions. Oh my god. People are dying. And
on the phone,
it looks,
Jacob has gone silent. He's
inshallah, he shall be protected.
Out.
And so what does Athena Grant do? She gets to the scene. And oh, she's going to kill that woman. She's going to kill her so hard. And she rendezvous with Bobby. Bobby's on the scene with the 118. We find out there are three dead so far. It's a huge pileup. There's at least a dozen injured. They haven't even barely started triage. They're trying to get everyone out. Buddy says they have a heat signature in one of the cars. And then they go in for Jacob.
I'm sorry. I have to make a joke. Buddy, when they're in an Omegaverse fanfiction... They're getting a heat signature.
You know, Alpha Rut is in full swing. The turns out the roof of the car, because the car is horrifically mangled and damaged. Mm-hmm. You guys ever play the game Twisted Metal? It's kind of like that. Well, it's bent too far inward, so they got to saw it off. And then we find out he's breathing. He's still alive.
Yes.
And then mom's still alive too. This is an interesting theme of this episode that I noticed a lot, but like the show in general, but specifically notice this episode that there's like huge devastating injuries happening and everyone survives.
Yeah.
Miraculously. It's a miracle, except for those three people.
I'll have more thoughts on that later, perhaps. but yeah, one big emotional beat in this scene is at one point Athena has this line about like, wow, just because one person was drunk and stupid, all these people have to be put in jeopardy. And you see Bobby kind of have a little bit of a reaction, or you see Athena kind of realize that she's just said that in front of her recovering alcoholic husband. And it's interesting. Yeah. You're getting, okay, this might open up something for Bobby of, you know, something a little triggering, something just bringing up who he used to be and who he still could be. Because I remember in one of those episodes where, this comes a little later because at this point they haven't even discovered that she's been drinking. But what happens is later on in the scene, they're talking about what might have caused the mom to start driving so erratically. And they're like, could she be in like having a medical emergency? And Athena says, like, I think I know what caused it. And she pulls up this mostly empty bottle of liquor. And yeah, I remember in one of the Bobby backstory episodes when his wife realized that he had relapsed, you get that line about like, you were driving our kids to school while high or whatever. And so he probably has had moments like at his lowest where he was driving while intoxicated. So, and obviously he has his backstory where he was responsible for killing a lot of people, you know, inadvertently while under the influence. So it's like he can relate to this woman a little bit, which kind of hits harder when Athena is so hard on the woman. Not that she doesn't deserve some blame here, but yeah, it's triggering for Bobby, basically.
Yeah, it is triggering for Bobby, especially because he sees that the kid, who, even though he's still alive, he has to go to neurosurgery because he possibly has a traumatic brain injury.
And
the woman, she's conscious because, you know, she was drunk and, you know, Athena says all that. What's interesting is that Bobby takes this so personally because, like, it's not just, like, reminding him of his past, but it's also, like, there's this much devastation. And yet what he did is, like, 8 of these, you know, he did like so much worse than this, you know what I mean? To scale, like, this isn't even a match. So not only is
says,
he exactly like this woman, he's like far
she was
worse
drunk
than
and
this
stupid.
Woman.
And it's like, you could have said the same about Bobby's little accident a few years ago.
And so my thing with this, my take is this, is does Bobby necessarily have like the right, like the objective right to be mad about this. No,
well, I don't think,
you know,
I don't think he's like mad like, at Athena. I think he's more,
but this does,
you know,
kick
it just
off
hurts
patch.
Him to hear that because it reminds him that, but it's not her fault. It's true.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. It's that like, you know, he doesn't necessarily, he wouldn't be right to be mad about her saying this, but you also understand why this is triggering for him.
Yeah, obviously.
And it's like, character flaw coming back out. I've heard of those. That's good, actually.
Well,
now,
to be clear, not like a character flaw, like it was a character flaw for him to feel upset.
No, it was like it was a character flaw for him to allow his addiction to completely take over his life, resulting in the deaths of over 100 people, including his entire family. I guess. It wasn't that big of a deal.
No, I just mean like it's not a character. Well, I mean, just like to be clear, it's not like a character flaw to have an addiction. It's more like we're not arguing about anything. It's just like I wouldn't call it a character flaw. It's more like his past.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a character. I think it's a
character
flaw.
I'm not trying to be like he didn't do anything bad by accidentally killing 147 people. Just more that it's less of a character flaw and more like a past trauma, a past thing
but,
that
like, we can agree
through,
that it's a character flaw when like you allow
that he carries.
It to like make you hurt other people, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, yeah, that's probably where the line is. Now, Hen is doing her job, and he goes over to
them,
her,
like,
and he's
watch people spin my wow. Jane really just defended Bobby's killing of 147 people.
No, watch them spin mine. Are you kidding me? They'll be like, wow, Ryan really condemning all addicts as like dangerous murderers or whatever.
Can just accept, guys, that we have good intentions and therefore. Or have the good faith in us to give us the benefit of the doubt that we actually fall somewhere in the middle and are trying to be nuanced.
We're trying, guys. We're trying. I had a long day at work. So anyways, Hen is doing her job and Bobby, he's all triggered and he goes over to her like a little snowflake and he goes like, Hen, you got this under control? She's like, no. I'm working on it.
It is kind of a funny thing to ask her.
Yeah, and Bobby fully looks like he's gonna kill himself. And so he wanders off and he finds this red shirt who's like working on like this car or whatever because there's a guy in there.
Red shirt is a great word for it. Guy who is suddenly named by Bobby but we've never seen before, but presumably is on the 118. He's one of our B-shifters, also known as
our
red shirts.
He's one of our B-shifters. And he asks, hey, red shirt, you know, did you disable the airbag in there? Because it doesn't look like it
and
is.
He's like,
and
he's like, what,
oh,
boss?
Yeah,
I can't hear you. And then the car
that?
Fucking
and then
explodes.
fucking explodes all over him. And he ends up looking like
Harvey Dent?
Well, yes. I was thinking Giancarlo Esposito in that episode of Breaking Bad.
Well, same kind of vibe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Half his face blown off. Buck, of course, goes over and is like, red shirt, you got to pull through. You're the heart and soul and the glue of this team. If we lose you, we lose everything. And then he's like, just check on the driver.
Well,
that's not what
happens. Buck is instructed from the beginning to go over to the driver who is like, has basically his entire face burned off. They got to get a burn blanket. It's pretty harrowing. They got to drag him out of the car.
It is. It's like, oh, wow. And
I'm
Bobby's
kind of
trauma
sure.
era continues.
Yeah.
He is
okay.
Because
I was about to say, like, I'm kind of not sure why this is even in the episode. But then I was like, oh, yeah, it's because Bobby was already being triggered. And now it's like, here are some burned bodies just to remind you of the fact that you choked your kids with smoke and burned their little bodies.
Oh, we have fun on this show. While Bobby is going through the five stages of grief over here in real time, Maddie, you know, she's taking more calls about this incident. There's a guy who's a diabetic, his blood sugar is getting really low,
and she's like, I actually don't have time for that shit because I am going into active labor.
Yeah. Diabetes, what about my baby? Okay. So she's like trying to like give like the make and model model of the car, like the license plate numbers to Bobby, it sounds like.
To the nearby.
It sounds like Bobby. I think it's Bobby.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it like, was LAPD, but no, it was LAFD. Yeah, get, like, Sue has to come in and like, take over.
Rescue. Sue has to come and take over
because Maddie's like, having violent contractions. How long have you been in labor?
Maddie gets off stage after their regionals third place performance and says, "My water just broke."
No,
and
then we don't get me wrong.
We go to commercial.
This will not be the first reference to Glee labor regionals because it was coming up
reference?
A lot in this episode.
The last reference. It was the first reference.
No, I said it won't be the last.
You said it won't be the first.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I've had a long day too. My kitten has worms, okay? My life is hard. I just spent like $400 at my cat's first vet visit, okay? Life is hard.
Oh, God. Life is hard. That's hard-earned organic grocery store deli money, okay? And
so true.
Like this, while Maddie is going into labor at her work, at her place of work, I'm just thinking to myself, why is she at work?
You know, maybe after trying to induce labor for so long, maybe she was like, you know what, let me just go back to my life and just let it happen naturally. And look what happened. It turns out going and stressing yourself out at work is the best way to induce labor.
She watched the pot boil for too long, and then the second she turned her back, it started, like, steam started erupting from the lid.
Yep.
And Sue clocks her ass, and she says, you know, get out of your shift, babe. I don't care if you have another hour. You're going to the hospital. Maddie's like,
Josh
I can push
through.
Josh
is driving her, which is kind of fun.
Josh is driving her, which is
they
so fun.
They get to have
fun.
One last queen out before she's a mother.
I just
before
know
she's
who's
a
playing
literal
some, like,
biological
crazy shit.
Mother. She was already a
what
mother
you,
in the, you know, not
what
figurative
do you
sense.
Think? A trying not to say mother challenge. What do you think Josh played as his, like, you know, pre-game for the baby car playlist?
Probably
I think he was playing some like crazy
terrible
shit.
Taste. He was probably playing like Taylor Swift Lover. And Maddie was like, if you don't turn this off right
now.
Oh,
a woman after my own heart. I was thinking maybe he's playing like songs about, like, you know, artist relationships with their mothers, like Madonna, Paradise Not For Me or something. And
maybe,
Maddie's like, turn
maybe.
This off. It's too complicated. I can't think about it.
He starts playing like Little Green by Joni Mitchell. She's like, I can't do this right now.
Oh, God. I don't... and meanwhile, the other half of the parental units, Athena, she's going to... Not Athena. Athena did not impregnate Maddie. Although.
although. We have not forgotten
Athena moment.
Okay.
Athena is going to escort the car drunk lady to the hospital to get arrested and also treated. Bethina has a little moment where Athena's like, I'm sorry I said that. And he's like, it's fine, babe. You do you. And then they're like, and then Sue calls in and she's like, she says, this is Sue. And she's like, can you spare one of your first responders? And they're like, oh. And then Chimney's like, oh my God, it's happening. Everybody stop, okay? And Athena's like, you can ride with me, babe. I got you. We're going to police escort our way over to the hospital. No traffic, especially because of the jam. And so it's a whole thing. Josh is going to drive Maddie. Athena is going to drive Chimney. And then they get to the hospital. Chimney gets there. And he says, wish me luck. And Athena gives him a very good piece of advice. She says, word of advice? If she tells you to shut up. She says it with so much conviction. I had to be like, oh.
You know, Michael was rambling and pissing her off.
Oh my God. His gay ass. Like he's just like, oh, what should her first outfit be? No, I'm just kidding. That's reinforcing stereotypes. The homophobia jumped out and it jumps out every episode. And I'm not about to stop now. While Athena is, you know, ushering him off to, you know, go witness the miracle of childbirth, mm-hmm. without speaking, of course, we find out because she turns around. She kind of turns around,
and right there is the husband of the drunk driver who's here to see his wife, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know what's happened yet. He's like, "What do you mean mm-hmm. I can't see her?" Because of course she's kind of in custody, so it's this complicated situation. And Athena is like, "You might want to sit down for this, okay?" Because she starts telling him like, So,
I'm gonna hold your hand when I say this.
Right, like, you know that pile
what does Niecy
up,
Nash say in that episode of what does Niecy Nash say in that episode of All's Fair? She says, like, you're gonna have to glue your wig down or something when I tell you this.
Athena's like your wife and son were a part of the pileup, and the guy's like, oh my god, are they okay? And she's like, so it's actually kind of a funny story. Your wife is being investigated as the cause of the pileup. And yeah, the husband is very resistant to this idea. You get the sense that he starts describing how his wife had struggled with addiction before, but had promised that she would get sober, and that when they had their son, he really thought it was this turning point, and that now she had a reason to really never drink again. And so he's really torn up to hear this. And then he hears that
so
Jacob...
easy.
Was the one to call 911, which kind of breaks him further. It is a very emotional thing. And you know, when I first watched this episode, for some reason, I kind of thought it would be that thing where, like, he said, he's like, she would never do this. And then by the end, we would get some twist that, like, actually she wasn't drunk and she had some kind of, like, brain hemorrhage or something. But no, she was drunk. I think I was thinking of, there's like a Grey's Anatomy episode where somebody comes in who seemingly has, like, driven drunk and, like, endangered the lives of a bunch of kids. And Richard, like, goes off at him because, you know, the character Richard on Grey's Anatomy is a former alcoholic, or I mean, alcoholic, recovering alcoholic. And he really, so it's so unprofessional, honestly, because they don't know the cause. They don't know that he was inebriated, but Richard has assumed that he was, and he's like going off at him so hard. And then it turns out that there actually was a medical explanation and that he really was sober. So for some reason, I thought it would be something like that because of the way the husband is so in denial, but it's not. And I do think that's kind of probably better writing.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
it's less
absolutely
cheap. It's less
absolutely
like,
better
plot twist,
the stronger
whatever
choice. First of all, I just have to say, I completely forgot that it's canon in Grey's Anatomy lore that Dr. Weber is an alcoholic because Meredith's mom made him one.
Is that canon?
Like, she's the one that, like, it, you know, they were at the bar in that flashback episode and she made him, like, down that glass of vodka. And it was framed like, oh, that got the ball rolling.
Recently enough. That's funny. Well, what life hasn't Ellis Gray ruined, you know?
Ellis Gray ruining lives left and right. She it was part of her morning routine. I mean, that's valid because she's still causing problems for Meredith, as you said all those episodes ago. And she's been dead for 20 years.
Past 20 seasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this guy is really torn up, obviously, to hear that not only did his wife relapse, and not only did it happen in front of his son and endanger his son, but it has endangered and killed all of these people. Like, what an awful thing to find out. And he's like, she promised me she wouldn't do this again. And Athena's like, sometimes we break our promises.
Mm-hmm. The devastation is really palpable here. And this is definitely Angela's earning her check scene. And I really appreciated that they didn't go the cheap route with it, you know, especially as someone who, like, not to overshare, guys, but I had a mom like this. And I definitely had plenty of instances in my youth where I was in the car and she was driving drunk. And there were several times when I had to tell her to look out for traffic because we would have gotten into a horrible collision. And so, like, I very much could have been this kid. And, like, I appreciated, like, the level of gravity they treated, like, a situation like this, even with, like, one-off side characters causing this kind of horrible calamity on, like, the fucking LA freeway. I appreciated that. You know, there's a real maturity to the kind of storytelling they were doing with this scene and with this whole moment here. It was very affecting. I was affected, is what I'm saying. Angela got her check. And then we jump all the way from there to the 10-centimeter dilation of Maddie's private parts. That baby, they
like
are going to get
that.
Her out of there. No, this isn't the pit. But they are going to get that baby out of there. And, oh, fuck. They left the baby bag in Albert's car. Well, shit. I guess we better call Albert and listen to his pooky little voicemail.
Oh, he's not
answering?
That's so weird. Hopefully nothing bad happened to him.
Yeah. Oh, well, at least Jennifer is glowing and they're about to experience the miracle of childbirth. And it's a very beautiful, optimistic scene.
Yeah.
Oh, Pookie.
I do feel for anyone who had to give birth during COVID because she's wearing a cloth mask. And like, I'm not one of those people who's like, wearing a mask is so hard. We should not wear a mask. Like, it's not hard, right? But I think if you're in a situation like this, like, I could imagine that every little thing would be overstimulating and would be like, you know, okay, not to be uncouth or disrespectful to the extreme feat that is childbirth, but have you ever been like fighting for your life on the toilet?
And
you have to just like take off all of your clothes. You can't look at your phone anymore because the pain is too much. It's like, I would imagine that at the very least childbirth would be like, shut up. Nobody talk to me. I could imagine wearing a mask even would be just one more thing as you're giving birth.
I don't know how she is in those stirrups with that hospital gown on. I would take that shit off like immediately because I'm like, no, I need to focus.
In nature, we should be naked.
I need to focus. Get this shit off of me. Yeah. I'm going to push this baby out. Meanwhile, Maddie's about to fight for her life in those stirrups. And Albert Hahn has plot relevance.
Yeah.
For once.
Albert Maybe not Hahn, in the way he'd
a
hoped.
Certified Postmates delivery driver. He is bleeding from his face and head. He calls 911 and May Grant answers the phone. He doesn't identify himself. He just says, yeah, I think I was in the accident. And then the camera it pulls out and it twists around to reveal not only is he bloody and in a horrific car accident, he's upside down.
Like, oh, as if it couldn't get any worse. Now you're upside down. That's crazy.
It's crazy. And then 1 minute before the pileup, guys, 1 minute before, he got into a car crash.
Guys, do you think he was picking up food for anybody and, like, they were looking at their app like, God, my DoorDash is late as fuck.
No, literally, I would have been so pissed off. I'm like, where is he? Like, where is my fucking Popeyes?
Your Taco Bell is going to be so cold by the time he gets there.
Imagine it gets there and like they forgot to like add in like, you know, fries or whatever. Like they forgot to put in your apple pie. Can you
one
go back?
Star, no tip.
I wanted my biscuits and I didn't get them, damn it. 1 minute before the pileup, Albert is driving on the road, just listening to his little straight boy music, and
he's listening to The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Put some respect on.
I feel like I would expand his world. You know, I would blow his mind with my choices. I'm talking like deep Bjork. I'm talking about the first time this straight man has ever heard Tori Amos. I'm talking about like how many songs from the seminal 1970, I think it is, album Tapestry by the one and only Carole King can I fit into this car ride? 73. Sorry,
something
Carol.
Like that.
Carol, come on the pod. Carol King, come on the pod and I can apologize in person. And we can talk about Will You Love Me Tomorrow.
I had to real quick Google her to make sure she was still alive. But she is. Carol, come on the pod.
Carol, and bring Joni and bring James Taylor. We'll get the three of you all together. It'll be a great little happy reunion. And we're not bringing Bob Dylan because Joni will get pissed off. He was the guy. The reveal is he was the guy that called and got cut off. Remember that guy? Remember that callback? Ooh, planting and payoff. The crash is nasty.
It's nasty.
Oh, my God. He tumbles down so hard. And then Sue gets on the little radio and she's like, this is Sue. We've got another guy who you didn't find yet. They think they got everyone. Think again. So
right,
what does May Grant, the investigator, do? What does she do? She calls back and she gets the voicemail.
Ooh. And she tells Bobby, it looks like the call came from an Albert Hahn. I called the number back and it gave me his voicemail. And Buck's like, what did the message say? And she says, he said his name and to not leave a message because, and Buck finishes the sentence and goes, because that's what texts are for. Because, you know, he's called Albert a million times for their booty calls and because they're roommates.
Everyone's faces fall collectively. It's like, oh no, not that guy. We did karaoke mm-hmm. with him once. He seemed really nice. And so they start looking around. They're like, Albert,
oh,
Albert.
We don't know him that well, but you know, Chimney would be really upset if anything happened to him. So,
and then we get a very interesting
Buck's
needle
thinking,
drop.
Like, ooh, I can't afford my rent without a roommate. How am I going to find another roommate in this town if Albert dies?
Hey, roomie.com. It's worked for me. It's great, Buck. It'll probably work for you.
Hashtag
make sure
not
it's not
sponsored.
Veronica. Hashtag not sponsored. And then we get a very interesting needle drop because we get a little back and forth thing of
I have thoughts about this
searching
too.
For Albert and Maddie. Like interspersed with Maddie giving birth. Ryan Murphy, I see you. I see you.
Well,
sir.
Yes. So point number one, it's obviously it's such an echo. I don't know if it was intentional, but it's such an echo of the Bohemian Rhapsody birth scene from birth mm-hmm. sequence from Glee. But also, when you said needle drop, I thought you were going to mention the song.
Oh, I'll mention the song. Let's talk about the song. What are your thoughts
let's
on the
talk
song?
About it. So this was To Build a Home by the Cinematic Orchestra, and I immediately knew I recognized it, but kind of in a way where I was like, it's probably just like that Heartbeat song where it's been in a lot of stuff. So of course I looked it up, and yeah, it's been on One Tree Hill, Friday Night Lights, Orange is the New Black, This Is Us. It was
I
in
know
three
where you're
different
going with
episodes.
This. I know where you're going with
it
this.
It was in three different episodes of This Is Us. And also, and that's when it hit me. Like a light bulb in my brain, like all my synapses firing at once. Step Up Revolution. This song was
that's not where I thought you were going
emotional
with this. That's not where
nope.
I thought you were going
this
with this.
This song was the emotional song that plays as Sean and whatever brown-haired girl are doing their Catherine McCormick is the actress's name, but I cannot for the life of me remember what the character was named. They're doing their emotional interpretive partner dance, like in a montage on the beach. And that is huge.
That's beautiful.
For the culture.
That's huge.
And I just need to know if Ryan Guzman like watched this episode. Like, I don't know that the actors watch they certainly probably don't watch every episode, but I don't know if they even like ever watch. But I wonder if there's a chance that Ryan Guzman watched this episode, got to this part, and was like, hey, that's the song I learned, you know, fancy romantic choreography to a few years ago.
I mean, I'd love to invite Ryan on the pod to talk about it, but like we can't
among other
responsibly
things.
Do that. We can't responsibly do that.
No, I would love
that.
To. I would love to have him on the pod to do like a hardball interview with him.
Ooh, yeah, like
be
Barbara
like, so
Walters
let's talk
style.
About your views on trans people or whatever.
Are you the bitch she's singing about? I didn't know that she sang. I thought that she rapped or whatever. He's Mariah in this moment, I suppose. Now you went to Step Up Revolution. I thought you were going to go to the fact that this song has been used in Grey's Anatomy. But your...
Yes, that is also on the list. But who cares? Everything's been used
but
in
who
Grey's
cares?
Anatomy,
everything's
be
been used in Grey's Anatomy. Now, I went to a very different place. Because... This one is for my cable TV viewers and movie theater goers of the pristine year of 2008, which I already said that I hated.
And
I do. There was some good art that came out.
So you had to backtrack.
I stand by it. I'm sorry. Fuck you.
I think 2008 was just fine.
I don't. But the fame did come out that year. So that's one for us. However, there was a very interesting cultural artifact from that year. I don't know if you're aware of this, but one of the weirdest and most unhinged ads from that year was an ad for Schweppes Ginger Ale set to Build a Home by the Cinematic Orchestra. And mm-hmm. it is entirely a montage of slow motion balloons exploding water in different circumstances for approximately 90 seconds. And it looks like something the slow-mo guys would do on like a Tuesday afternoon. It's not impressive, I guess, but maybe I'm just saying that with hindsight. Well, it looks like, you know, a Zack Snyder screen test. Except
which presumably
not lit as
you
well.
Would love.
Well, it's not lit as well. And lighting is a very sensitive topic in these days. But it ends with a very bespoke word. It ends in a very bespoke word. It says something along the lines of, and that's what you call schweppervescence. The ad is called Burst, and it is freely available for viewing on YouTube. At Phoenix Kusangi says, I have never, never cried watching a commercial. Even the crappy Save the Kids / Whales / Pets ones. I cried at this one. Amazing. That what? Comment was posted 17 years ago. I have to know what they're up to now. So at Phoenix Kusangi on YouTube, if you are out there and somehow listening to this pod, come on the pod. I have to get to know you.
Wow, people used to be so innocent. But also, I do understand why they would use this song in the Schweppes ad, because if there's one thing that this song calls to mind whenever I hear it, it's ginger ale.
You're right. Why didn't I think
about that? I always wondered why, while watching Step Up Revolution, I always got this the strangest hankering for an ice-cold ginger ale. And now I know.
I was watching This Is Us the other day, and I was jonesing for one of those. But
jonesing,
hey, you know
for
what?
Some ginger ale.
At the end of the day, Canada Dry outsold. So sorry
true.
About that,
come
Schweppes.
On. But also, that is funny that it's been in This Is Us so many times, because I feel like the melodramatic kind of 2000s nature of that song is so perfectly apt for like the melodramatic 2000s 2010s coded vibe of This Is Us.
I
can see them getting along very well. Anyhow,
I have to agree.
The 118 are trying to find this car, and you know, they realize that Albert wasn't in the pileup, he was in front of it. So they go to the nearest exit.
I'm sorry.
Exit.
Bobby is talking to May over the phone, and I can't hear him over this terrible song. I literally can't make out what he says, and the subtitles were giving me no
help.
The song is quite loud.
But yeah, they track down the car. Maddie's pushing and stuff, and just as baby whatever pops out, they find Albert, and they get him out of the car. But his heart stops, and they're resuscitating him. And, you know, will the baby be born? Will Albert be dead? It's hard to say.
Albert's soul passes to the baby's body.
Oh my God.
Welcome back,
that would be
Albert
crazy.
Han.
If it was like Om Shanti Om, the Bollywood movie, and right as Albert died, he was reincarnated into Madni's baby.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
Yes. Trisha Paytas, never heard of her. Albert Han. Now here's a question, because their baby is a girl. So do you think if Albert Hahn's soul was reincarnated into the baby would grow up to be trans? Trans
well,
Albert Hahn.
I don't think
trans
so. Well,
Albert.
Well, that'd be slay, because obviously we support the trans community. But also, I think you can be reincarnated into any form, right? Isn't that the traditional reincarnation belief? That like you can
do
be
souls
a human,
have genders
you can
do souls
be,
have
like
gender
flower.
Identities
that's a good idea. I mean, question, what the fuck, that's a good question. Or is and or idea.
I'll
do souls
ask
have
a,
gender?
I'll ask a Hindu or a Buddhist scholar if there are any
right.
Hindu or Buddhist like, scholars in our comments.
I'm sure
please
that's
let
the
me
prime
know.
Demographic of the First Risk podcast.
Yes.
But anyway, this is a little too, I don't think we, small-minded as we are going to be able to answer this question on the air right now. But they're handing Maddie's baby to her, and Albert is still flatlining, and they're really editing it like he's going to die. He flatlines for a long time, but just as all seems lost, just as they're about to give up, there's a beep on the heart monitor, and he doesn't die.
Can I say something controversial?
Yeah, you think he should have died?
I want him to die. I wanted him to die. I'm sorry.
No, I did a little bit too. And like, no offense to Albert. Like, this isn't, you know, we like Albert, fine. But
yeah.
He's been so non-involved in the plot. And also, I think it feels so kind of cheap and pointless to have him have this near-death. By the way, the Albert near-death experience in this episode, I was like looking at the runtime of the episode. It starts and ends within like 10 minutes. Like, it's not, it'd be interesting if we saw him get into a crash like early in the episode when the pileup happens and then see that the 118 have missed him. And then you have like that suspense throughout the episode of like, are they going to find Albert? When are they going to figure out he was in the crash? Like, that might've been a little better drama wise. Cause as it stands, it seems like they didn't want to write anything going wrong in the Madney birth, perhaps because they rightly decided that Madney have kind of been through enough. Although they then put, you know, Chimney's brother through the ringer. So that's still a really difficult thing to happen to them right now. But maybe they had decided that it would be maybe in a little bit of poor taste to immediately like have something go wrong with the birth or whatever. And so instead,
but then
they decided
fucking turn tail on it. They turn tail on all of their stakes that they established for this and just make him be fine. And
well,
it feels
exactly,
so cheap
exactly.
And
so
pointless.
I'm only halfway through my thought.
Sorry. Continue your thought, please.
So, you know, they seemingly thought that instead of putting the drama directly on Madney, they'd have a dramatic thing happen to someone adjacent to Madney. And then by having, it's not that I want Albert to die like for Madney's sake, like that would really suck, especially given what they've both been through, and Chimney has already kind of lost a brother figure, so that would really suck. But it does feel especially cheap and pointless to just have this, not only does Albert survive, but then of course it doesn't really have any ramifications in the rest of the show. So it's as much as I like season four, this is another weak moment because it reminds me more of the near-death experiences we start to see like late in the show, like the lightning, like that random episode in season eight where Denny almost dies, and it's just this very like cheap, poor taste kind of thing. So I wasn't a fan of this.
Isn't it just extra stupid that it's Albert?
It's just extra stupid that it's Albert. Because again, Albert, he's like a fine guy. He's a fun character, but he's not like a character. He's not a main character, and he's not even really a supporting character. He's kind of just a side character because he has no real agency in our story as of yet. We haven't gotten any Albert POV, right? So it feels fundamentally ridiculous and low stakes to put a character like Albert in a near-death experience in this at this point in the show.
Like, imagine if at the end of that season of Downton Abbey, like, she like gave birth and there was that harrowing side by side of like her like talking to like on the phone about the new baby and how excited she was for her husband to meet the baby, and then like the side by side of like him dead in like the ditch because his car flipped over or whatever,
Does
or carriage
happen?
Or I don't, it happens in at the end of I think season two of Downton Abbey. I haven't seen it in so long.
Wow, spoilers.
Spoilers for Downton Abbey. Spoilers for fucking Downton Abbey.
Yeah, here's the thing. If you haven't watched it yet, you're probably not going to.
Imagine if it zoomed. It seems like no one's watching it at this point. I mean, like, I think that last movie they did
flopped
so hard. But yeah, but with the movie, which I think didn't do well. And I think, and like, imagine like if they like did like a slow zoom in on like the guy's dead face. And then his eyes just like burst open and he takes in a gasp. And it's like,
right.
So what was the point of that?
Right. It was just to yank our chain. It was just to jerk us around. So I'm not the biggest fan of this sort of thing. I feel
is
like...
Is he Prometheus or something?
I like, think if they wanted to make this dramatic for Madney, they should have just had something dramatic happen to
Madney. Lazarus, not
and
Prometheus.
I think,
Lazarus.
And I think if they wanted to have like a dramatic, poignant side-by-side montage, they could have just had like a dramatic rescue in the pileup, right? That wasn't Albert, because frankly, the emotional impact would have been about the same since, again, Albert is not really a character at this point.
Yeah, if only there was like a child character who was placed in peril that like we don't know super well, but was like established as like a sympathetic like character.
Right, it could have just
in,
been
like
one of our characters that we introduced in the call in this episode.
Yeah, what if it was Jacob, the fucking terrified kid in the car with the alcoholic mom, you know,
or,
and they have to like try to save the kid's life. And then it's like, and then it's like,
rearrange the timeline a little bit.
And then the through line is like kids, you know, because like that seems to be like seeming like a point of like anxiety with these adult characters. Right. So I have notes for these people.
So yeah, that kind of is one of the things that mars this episode for me, is I just don't think the Albert thing was a very good choice.
I also do think the birth scene placed side by side with like the medical emergency scene, it's giving very Grey's to me, and I'm not sure why. Is there a moment in Grey's that is reminiscent of this? I'm asking the expert.
Probably. Listen, I am the expert, and also there are like 22 seasons, and it all kind of becomes a blur to me, except for the moments I really remember. So probably, but also like it probably felt like Grey's Anatomy because they were playing a song so Grey's Anatomy-esque that it has in fact been on Grey's Anatomy, and it was just this very like melodramatic moment, and half of it took place in a hospital, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. But anyways, all of the immediate tension of that moment is stripped away as we cut to commercial through the mirror of my mind. And then the next morning, Josh is coming up on the end of his shift. 6 pounds, 1 ounce. Small baby.
Yay. Yeah. My cat.
How heavy were you when you were born?
And it turns out, I don't know actually, but I was kind of a chubby baby, so maybe I was big. But I found out at the vet that my kitten is 3 pounds, 10 ounces.
Wow.
So Boggy is smaller and more beautiful.
And younger too. I was like a 9 pound baby, I think.
Damn.
That's what I was told. I was a big baby. Yeah. I was a chubby baby, and then I'm tall like now in life, so mm-hmm. I guess I started early.
Yeah.
Anyways,
my cousin
they all
had
celebrate.
Like a 10 pound baby. I was like, God bless you. That's crazy. But yes, at dispatch, May is still contemplating her friend request. Everybody is celebrating to the point where they're like, we should go out and get drinks, even though it's 7 a.m. We should go to this bottomless mimosa. Kind of a crazy culmination to this episode about the drunk driver.
Let's get bottomless mimosas at 7 a.m, guys. We just had a
let's
crazy shift.
Let's go cause another pile up on the freeway.
And May's like, I'm 18. Yeah. I don't have a fake because I'm not cool and my mom's a cop.
Right.
And she's having this like, yeah, this weird Degrassi side plot moment that we get like 2 instances of, and then we never hear about until like the next episode or maybe the next one after. I don't remember. We'll get there. Mm-hmm. We do see Jamal.
Yes.
We do see Jamal.
Shout out to Jamal.
And he's gonna get Josh pregnant too.
I'm obsessed with like the Jamal. It's the Josh and Jamal, Josh and Terry love triangle that must be going on in the background of the show.
Especially because you know Terry and Jamal want nothing to do with each other. You never see them in the same place at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like
sure
they
have
we've
never
beef.
Seen them on screen
together. I feel like
together.
Maybe
their
they
beef is that they both
up.
Love Josh.
They both love Josh. I feel like they... No, but I feel like it goes deeper because I feel like they had a hookup that was like good, and then one of them ghosted the other one. And then now there's like this competition over Josh between
See,
them. And they don't even work on the same floor.
911
you know? So
writers,
like,
why are we not taking advantage of these opportunities? But
why
anyway,
are we not?
Sue,
it's
Sue
gay and that would be
May,
screen time. So
Sue tells May the good news that Albert is all right.
We save it all for Tommy. We save it all for Tommy Kennard.
The best character, the most interesting character we could have used our gay storylines on. So May gets the good news that Albert is alive, he's stable, and at the hospital, Buck comes in to see Chimney, and Chimney's like, oh, you must be here to see our baby. I know the hospital said that no visitors, but, you know, I'll update you. The baby's doing great, Maddie's doing great, she was great at giving birth, and Buck's like, I'm not here about the baby. It's Albert, like whatever. It's, you know, he's
and then
here
it
to
cuts
deliver
away.
The bad news.
And then it cuts away. They never know how to write like these actual dramatic reveal moments. I want to see it. Don't cut away. Show me the moment. I want to see the devastation. Don't just skip the foreplay, you know?
Right.
I want the gradual build of tension. Come on, it needs to be devastating. I want to be devastated. Oh, I was so frustrated by this.
Yeah.
Instead, we get Hen coming home. Oh,
which
we
we're
have
not
to see
frustrated
Henren fighting.
By.
But we
but
have to see Henren fighting.
Yes, true. But it's interesting. Karen has packed a bag for Nia to go on her first overnight visit with her biological mother. She's making pancakes. And Hen is kind of like, gets frustrated. She's like, I don't want this to happen tonight. You know, I need Nia to be here tonight. I'm exhausted. And Karen is like, you need to stop. Like, this is happening whether you like it or not. And Hen's like... Yeah. Why are you, I can't believe, how can you just stand there? You know, you're just, you're packing the bag,
so
you're making pancakes. I know.
I'm so mad.
I guess it might just be the kind of person I am, but I am more able to see Karen's point of view here, but I do, same. Obviously, yeah, like, Hen's emotions are understandable, totally, but they get in an argument because Hen's like, how can you just stand there and act like this is all normal when, like, our daughter's being torn away from us? And Karen is finally like, I'm not, you know, this doesn't just not affect me. I am handling it. She's handling it. I'm coping. Mm-hmm. I'm holding on. You know, I am trying to make
hashtag
this work.
Cope harder, Karen.
Cope.
You know what? Do you know why I was so on Karen's side in this moment? It's because we just played D&D last night. My group did. And like, my character was in such a Karen situation in this moment. And so, like, and someone else was like having a full Hen moment with me. And so like, now I was watching this, I'm like, Karen, I get it. We're on the same side here, girl. I see you. And Tracy is acting her ass off in this scene.
She really is.
Aisha
doing well.
Because
again,
she has
this more understated role as the person who has to kind of keep it inside, whereas Hen gets to express it. And so obviously Aisha is a great actress. But yeah, like, Tracy, I think, has the more like meaty role here, where she's like, how dare you, you know, imply that I don't care. But this is what we signed up for. You know, this is the job. And of course we love her. And of course she feels like our daughter. But like, we have to just do this. We have to hold on. Like, she has a mother that's not us. And that's what's best for her, is to try to reconnect with her. And so she's like, I need you to, you know, why aren't we in this together? Like, don't make me hold on alone.
It's got the craziest distortion on you in the call for a second.
All right.
Saying that, there were two words that sounded like you were being taken over by like an alien supercomputer.
And maybe I was. Okay.
It was like, she has.
And
but, like,
maybe
insane distortion. It was so you're correct. And
yeah, Karen,
she kind of puts Hen in her place a little bit.
Or no,
and
Karen doesn't
storm out.
Nia, sorry. I thought because she kind of walks out of frame, but no, Nia comes in and is like, Hen's home. And Karen, like, you can tell again, this is showing like what Karen does. She just like pulls it all together, like puts away the fight she was just having, and she's like, yeah, Mama Hen's here, like, go say hi. Karen is mothering to end all mothers, literally, right?
Yeah.
And she's doing a great job. She's keeping this family together. She is the glue that holds this family together.
Does Hen go to therapy?
Not regularly, I don't think. She probably should. I know
she did
after she hit that girl with the ambulance, but, you know, maybe it'd be good to or even
the most,
like, a little couples
therapy. The most therapy she's had in the last 6 months was having, like, dead girl talks with Rob Lowe in a mineshaft.
True.
Subscribe to our Patreon if you want to hear more about that.
Yes. We finally watched the fabled Lone Star crossover episode. But yeah,
yes.
I wonder if they could even stand to do some couples therapy, Hen and Karen. Not because, you know, contrary to perhaps popular belief, like, you don't have to be like on the verge of divorce or breaking up to go to couples therapy. Like, that can just be a productive thing to do as people. Like, if you
there's
want
such
to
a
grow
stigma
together,
around it too,
definitely.
You know, because I feel like you hear like they're in couples therapy. Oh, they're on the skids. It won't be long now. And it's like, they're being productive.
Yeah,
excuse
it can be a responsible thing to do. So
yeah.
I wonder if they would benefit from that.
But Karen,
I feel like it's partly because in movies or TV, whenever somebody is in couples therapy, it's to communicate that they're fighting and they're doing terribly.
Yeah. But Karen, she, you know, shoulders all of the burden of holding this family together. And then back at the hospital, Albert's beautiful face is all scratched up and bloody and bruised. And Chimney is just like, oh, my little brother. My little boy.
Chimney's sitting there talking to Albert about how, I can't believe I'm a father now because I can't believe I'm a father and you got in a horrible car accident. What if you were a new father and your brother was in a car accident and your dad didn't love you and your wife was about to get postpartum depression and you got rebar through your skull a few years ago?
And your stepbrother was bisexual and his boyfriend was ugly and he should have been with the guy with the nice ass and the son that they fathered together. Yeah, that hasn't happened yet. It's fine. Now, yeah. How do you feel? Because this is a kind of a common trope in these serious medical adjacent shows. How do you feel about these coma scenes, like where like one character is talking to like the comatose loved one?
I think it's all about execution and like the content of the scene, right? Like it can work. I don't think the scene is bad. Like obviously, it's carried by Kenny Choi's performance. It's more the larger frame of the Albert storyline feeling so tacked on to me that, like, I don't really care about what's happening here.
Do you know what I was thinking about more than anything in this scene? I was thinking about that scene in Degrassi Next Class season 3 where Miles is at Tristan's coma bedside.
Oh, God. Don't after fucking the bus remind crash. Me of the part Tristan is in a coma and Miles has to cheat on him with an uncomfortably young feeling character and apparently after a bunch of people
after
in
the fanfic
subreddit.
Bus crash.
I'm traumatized because there were a bunch of people in the Degrassi subreddit. Well, there were like probably 3 people in the Degrassi subreddit, but they were an extremely loud minority who really, really shipped Miles and Lola, the girl that he cheated on Tristan with while he was in a coma, and hated Tristan and clearly like hated him more because he was like competition for their ship. And so all they would spend their time doing was posting anti-Tristan propaganda and pro Miles and Lola propaganda. And it was so bizarre to me. I'm sorry to go off on this very strange tangent.
No, please.
I've never gotten to express this to anyone on any platform. It was so bizarre to me that people would ship something that came out of that storyline because that storyline was one of the most unpleasant, cringeworthy, just like depressing things I've ever watched on all levels for everyone involved. Nobody was having a good time during that storyline. I don't know how you could come out of it being happy for Miles and Lola. I don't know how you could come out of it being happy for Miles and Tristan. I don't know how you could come out of it with any positive feelings towards Degrassi Next Class because that was just a complete shit show. And it was like, I've never watched something that so psychically negatively affecting. And one of those Miles and Lola shippers, here's the real tea, one of them was like a writer for BuzzFeed, so she occasionally got an opportunity to like interview real people involved with the show. She got an opportunity to interview Linda Schuyler, founder of Degrassi, you know, the original creator, and she took some of that poor woman's valuable time to ask her about her Miles and Lola ship. And I will forever be so secondhand embarrassed. And anyway, it had Buck Tommy energy is all I'm saying.
Do you think Linda got home after that interview and like was like, you know, she like went up to Steven and was like, you're never going to believe what the kids are latching on to these days. Like,
possibly,
this is the direction we need to take the show.
Realistically, I think she was very kind about it and just sort of took it in stride as like these crazy young Degrassi fans like, oh, it's really had a renaissance online. But basically, that is one of the reasons I left the Degrassi subreddit, is it was just an extremely toxic place full of extremely weird, specific stans and haters of various characters and ships. It was terrible energy.
See, here's the thing. I hated the Lola and Miles stuff, but I also kind of like hated Lola's relationship with Tiny just as much. Sorry, Tiny Bell.
Tiny Bell. What a wonderful name for a character. No, you hated it because they never developed that relationship, let alone the character.
And it was just like an
Tiny.
Obstacle for Tiny and Shay, who actually had stuff in common, you know, like their love of science and their brains and an actual interest in each other.
No, see, I didn't even remember that Lola had a relationship with that guy because I only remember the things that, like, actively made me want to die from Degrassi Next Class. Everything else is kind of just a boring Netflix blah bowl of oatmeal.
Which is fair, and that's honestly a good way to remember it.
Anything bad about Degrassi Next Class, you get these Next Class stans who are like, wow, I can't believe people hate Next Class because it's woke. And it's like, are you fucking crazy? I don't, Degrassi has always been woke. I don't hate it because it's woke. I hate it because it's bad. I hate it because the cinematography is bad and the writing is bad.
Can I be honest? Degrassi Next Class is not as woke as these people think it is. It tries to be woke.
No, it's low-key like less
and, like,
clear-eyed about its morals.
Like, I get it. There's no hashtag Degrassi nudes or whatever. But like, think about the anything they did with Goldie. Think about the anything they did with like Saad or like, honestly, even kind of Maya's storyline, you know, like it was like, and like,
no,
I understand
it was closer
that, like,
to 13 Reasons Why than classic Degrassi. sassy.
It really was. And like they tried really hard with like the Frankie racism storyline, and
they fell
like,
flat on their face.
They fell so flat on their face because they centered it entirely around Frankie and not yep. about, you know, the actual people that she pissed off.
Yeah.
You
and,
know,
I mean, people, one of the bad faith Tristan hates that I would see online all the time is people would get really up in arms about the character of Tristan being biphobic, which, like, yeah, he did express things on the show that were like biphobic microaggressions. But here's the thing, guys. If Tristan said something biphobic and it went completely unchallenged by the show, that wasn't Tristan, the character who magically exists as a real person in your brain. That was the writers of Degrassi just being biphobic themselves, okay? If he was biphobic and it wasn't like a storyline about him being biphobic, if it just went unquestioned, then that was just the writers being biphobic. And you can't just pretend it was like the real person Tristan who did that. So that's what I have to say about
that. The real person Tristan who really was biphobic and the real person Bobby Nash who really died.
So anyway, let's be done with this episode. So Chimney does his whole speech and at the end he's like, I wish you would just wake up. And yay, Albert wakes up. So that was easy.
It's a medical miracle. Oh my God.
It's a medical miracle.
He wakes up, his little face is all bruised up and stuff. And then, little Bobathon is sitting at the Bathina dinner table and he's like not doing well. He's like, oh,
yeah.
He's like Lois in that one meme of like her looking at the pill bottle, but it's just his mental image of a bottle
of
vodka.
He does kind of resemble that. Yeah, he does kind of resemble that.
Athena comes home and she's like, what's going on? Jacob's alive. The mom's alive. We're going to arrest her. Everybody lives. Albert's whatever. And mm-hmm. Bobby's like, oh, I'm just not sitting well with this. It's not sitting mm-hmm. right for me. I can't talk about it with you. There's no communication with us anymore because you said that thing. And she's like, I'm sorry.
Well,
he's like, I forgive you.
That is not at all what happens in this scene. Okay, let's not get it twisted. She apologizes to him and says, I'm sorry for what I said at the scene. You know, you're nothing like that woman. And he says, no, I am. I am like mm-hmm. that woman. I'm exactly like her. And if I ever forget
that. He's worse
that,
than that woman. He's worse.
Yeah. Well, I he's think worse. He says that. And he's like, if I ever forget that, that'll be a dangerous day. And I thought this was so, I don't know. I just thought it was very poignant and moving and well-written and interesting. Like, I don't know. I like them and I like this conflict again. And I like that like Bobby's having a character moment because sometimes on the show that sort of takes a backseat, like after the first couple seasons, that can take a backseat. And Bobby, like I said, can become just like the fatherly advice machine. So it's nice to like have him actually doing stuff and having feelings and a point of view and stuff.
Okay, but again, this is the problem for me of, like, the way they killed off Bobby ruins Bobby for me, in that, like, I can't, I feel bad because I love this storyline, and I remember loving it so much and eating it up so much when I was watching through it for the first time, but, like, mm-hmm. it's really hard for me to get, like, emotionally invested in Bobby's inner world now, because, like, I've seen the super virus.
Sure.
I've seen What's-Her-Face, the evil doctor. I've seen where this goes. So, like,
I feel a level of
distance from this.
I almost feel more like I normally feel like a level of distance from Bobby now when I watch him on the show. But when he has like a character moment, I kind of am immersed again in like, oh, yeah, Bobby being alive and being a character.
Bobby alive in our memories.
Right.
And so what does he do? What does he do instead of, you know, swalking it out? He goes to AA. Okay. Yeah. Alcoholic King.
It's good for him. It's like he tells Athena, I need to go out for a while. And for a minute, you're like, oh, is he like going to go do something shady? But no, he goes to AA and it's like he's channeling this energy into a healthy place and sharing his feelings mm-hmm. and seeking community. And that's good. And actually, mm-hmm. I thought this was one of our rare good moments of ending narration because it actually starts as a scene and it makes
yeah.
sense for Bobby to be giving a poignant speech.
There's actually a frame for the montage ending narration. Like, I
right.
appreciated that. Like, we're improving. Let's see if it lasts. And so we get our little montage. We get, you know, lock her up. We get, you know, we get a Chris moment.
One note. We see that little Jacob is recovering in the hospital with his dad. And then we see the drunk driving mom. And can we talk about how she's like waking up in the hospital and getting handcuffed? She's got like scratches all over her face. And yet she has these perfectly coiffed, perfectly curled, beachy waves, like completely styled, blown out hair. And that kind of thing, just, it's not like a true deal breaker, but it's so annoying because you're like, come on, she would not look like that.
I'm going to be honest. That's a slay from me. Like, that's a, that, like, I ate that up. I'm like, oh, yes, queen, you did cause all of that mayhem and that havoc on the, and bloodshed on the, you know, on the freeway there. But you're not going to let that stop you from turning a look, you know, even in handcuffs. And I love that.
I guess that,
for
is
her.
One way to look at it.
You know, and then they parade Chris out like the little prop that he is for 10 well, seconds.
Okay.
And Eddie's like, this is my son. Let me give him a hug.
If anything, I feel like this is more of a demonstration of Eddie being a prop, as they kind of remembered that Eddie existed and that he might feel some type of way seeing a young boy about Christopher's age in a precarious situation like that.
So then Christopher becomes a prop of a prop.
Sure, becomes sure. A prop of I'm a just prop. Saying, I'm just saying he's not always a prop. Whatever.
You know, I'm not saying that Chris is only a prop. I'm saying that they're using him as a prop in this scene for something completely unrelated.
Sure. They're using him to remind us that Eddie exists. And so Eddie like hugs his son real tight because you're like, oh yeah, Eddie has a son. We should hastily write that into the episode.
This is like the fifth time they've done this in these closing montages, by the way. It's like the fifth time. That's why I'm saying it now. It's like the fifth time they've done this.
I can literally think of times when they're going to do it again.
Exactly.
Oh, Eddie and Christopher.
And then we go to Hen Wren is going to
they're seeing off Nia
for her overnight. And can we talk about Nia's fit? It is fire.
Why is she like so stylish in this scene? She's got like a cute little like wrap on her hair. She's got a little baby leather jacket. It's very
over
she's
like
got
this,
like this little plaid like, pinafore dress.
It with like
very
yellow
stylish
and black plaid. It's so stylish, and it's like you can tell that is Henrietta Wilson's daughter. You can tell that is Tony looking over her shoulder, being
that's
like,
true.
"That's how we're
grandma.
Gonna dress her."
Well, do you remember like several years ago, people would post these dumb things online, being like, "If I ever have a baby, this is how I'm gonna dress it," and it'd be like a little picture of a little baby in like 2010s millennial fashion.
I remember the parodies because I remember seeing
right.
ones like,
I wasn't like
if
actually
I had a
in
baby,
circles where people
this
were
is how I was gonna dress it,
that.
And then it was just like a picture of like a giraffe or something.
Yeah, but there was a source for that, which was people
like
unironically
desk,
posting that.
You know,
and yes, she's giving that to me, like sort of like someone's idea of how they would dress their kid, but not a realistic way. But then again, maybe they were
just
trying
giving
to
TikTok
sort of assert,
mom. Yeah.
Yes, but maybe they were trying to sort of assert their dominance to the biological mom by like sending her off in this adorable outfit. Like, by the way, we've been taking really good care of your kid.
This
so
is
no
what we can
business.
Do for her. So right. You know, step up. You know, let's see what
be
you
the
got.
Mom
let's
who stepped up. Revolution.
let's go round for round. You know, let's go fit for fit. Who can deck her
and
out
so
the best.
So we go back to Bobby, who's like, last
like
night was
Project
a hard
Runway.
Night, but I'm here, and I didn't have a drink. So
good
yay
for
me.
You, Bobathan. Love you, King. And then Buck is, you know, he's Zoom babying. He's meeting Zoom baby. He's Bunkle.
He's, being a Zoom
he's
Uncle
Buck. Little Bunkle. And that's Buck Aww. Uncle, and also bisexual uncle. So, you know,
right.
Jot that down.
Jot that down.
And baby girl Han is in Maddie's arms. It's very cute, very sweet. She looks like a beautiful new mother. Jennifer is glowing. And then she calls him Uncle Buck. And she's like, oh, Chimney wanted to be here for the first one. And then he comes by and he's like, hey, it's Uncle Buck. Is that the first one, right? And they're like, yep. So it turns out, so they close the laptop and Buck's like, bye. I miss you already. I'll meet you in a couple weeks. And Maddie's like, I had to choose a name for the birth certificate. And Chimney's like, oh, I bet it's like, you know, like porridge or something. Cause I have no faith in my wife. And she's like, I had to name her Ji-Yun after your mom.
Yeah. Oh my
I have
God.
To name her Ji-Yun. And it's like, Oh, Ji-Yun.
Raise your hand
Buckley
if you cried.
Han.
Raise
I
your
cried.
Hand if you cried, because I
I'm raising
did.
My hand.
I'm raising
I did
my
too.
Hand as well. Yeah, she's like, I called Mrs. Lee, and she just kept saying, I wish his mother was here to see her. And that's when I knew. And Chimney is so touched, and it's, yeah, I cried. I cried.
I will say also a stark reminder of how much better of a name Ji-Yun Buckley Han is than Robert Nash Han.
But is it a better name than Chicago Buckley Han? Because remember when he was like, what about something modern, like Chicago?
You know what? All I'll say is, you know, I was really thinking about, you know, their baby's names and everything. And I got to thinking about, you know, how Gwyneth Paltrow named her baby Apple. And you know how much I love apples. And that's when it hit me. The perfect baby name. Drizzle.
I'm sure there are dumb celebrities out there who have named their kids Drizzle.
Did you not catch my reference?
I did not.
I am disappointed in you. Wow. I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, well.
Anyways, they're the luckiest people ever. She's so lucky. She's a star. But she cried with the lonely heart. Thinking, if there's nothing missing in my life, then why do these tears come at night?
Yeah, that about wraps it up.
What an episode.
What an episode. You know, highs and lows.
Mixed thoughts.
Highs and lows, but you know? They did have me crying by that ending. So, you know, still not too bad. Not as bad as it can get.
I agree. I wonder how hard I'll cry at the season 8 finale. So I guess that remains to be seen. I was a bit let down by this one. I'm not going to lie, because I was looking forward to it. And I'm like, it was fine. It was mid. But like I said, the highs were high. So, you know, I'll give it the pass. You know, inshallah, Albert's wounds will heal in due time.
Something tells me we'll barely even see the aftermath.
And in the meantime, thank you guys so much for tuning into another thrilling installment of this podcast. If you would like to support us further, follow us on social media at First Risk Podcast, spelled how it sounds, of course. And if you would like to support us even further than that, subscribe to our wonderful Patreon. We're putting out, finally it's happening. We're prudes no longer.
We either just put out or are about to put out a Patreon episode with our old friend Justin. We brought him back to guide us guide us through the Lone Star crossover from season 4 that we have long avoided. So that's very special, very highly anticipated.
Yeah. If you want to know how we felt about it, I can give you like a short, you know, little preview. It wasn't great.
Well, we were a little biased, but yeah, we ended up talking about a bunch of unrelated topics because we didn't really want to talk about the episode for that long. But it's a fun one.
But Justin liked it, and Justin liked it.
As you know, me and Ryan and Justin, we just get along like three little apples on top of a little boy's head that are about to get shot by an arrow, which I'm always saying.
What?
So...
Three blind mice. How about that? We're three blind mice barging around in this Patreon bonus episode. So if you want to listen to that.
Was totally fine. But yes, okay. Do subscribe to our Patreon this month if you're interested in that. And, you know, good night. And be careful on those roads because we are getting a lot of freezing rain here in the Twin Cities. And I'm a little worried that my bus might crash tomorrow morning, cause a giant pileup.
Well, listen, on the way home from work today, I did see a bus crash that caused a pileup I think it was 9th Avenue. You know, keep an eye out, Jane. I hope it doesn't happen to you.
Thank you.